The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why Christians keep talking as if their freedoms are being encroached upon. Yes, of course, there's nothing for Christians to worry about these days. Nothing at all. There's no leftist, politically correct agenda out there. Nobody is trying to suppress freedom of speech. And even when people like the mayor of Houston try, it never succeeds, right? In fact, there is great news for five Christian pastors in Houston, Texas. Fantastic news. Hold on to your seats. You see, previously they had been instructed by city officials to turn over any church sermons which dared to speak out against the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance, HERO for short, and the city's refusal to accept certain signatures for the creation of an opening ballot. They were speaking about that too, so that had to be turned over as well. Well, some bad press and public outcry has evidently rescinded the order. Now, the amended motion no longer asks clergy to turn over sermons which address homosexuals or gender identity, and instead demands that the pastors just hand over all speeches or presentations related to HERO. Well, that's a relief. These pastors can praise God and heave a big sigh. What a victorious day for religious freedom. Of course, some might ask what the difference is between a church speech or a sermon. Good question. Actually, there is no difference. But in our world of Orwellian newspeak, the government poking its nose into speeches sounds less like an assault upon religious liberty and more like the mere limitation of free speech in general. Oh, wait. I almost forgot. Free speech is also guaranteed in the Constitution, right next to the line about freedom of religion. That's right. The initial subpoenas were issued in response to a local pastor speaking out against a lawsuit filed against HERO, perhaps better known by its nickname, the Bathroom Bill. Religious groups were bothered by a law that would allow men to use the ladies' restroom based upon the feeling that they are actually women that day and should be allowed to make that judgment call, anatomy notwithstanding. According to the city's attorney, certain pastors were subpoenaed because they were vocally opposing the bathroom bill. Attorney Eric Stanley of the Alliance Defending Freedom says, "The city of Houston still doesn't get it. The subpoena still asks for information that encompasses speeches made by the pastors and private communications with their church members. This tramples their First Amendment rights to free speech and the free exercise of religion. Any inquiry into what these pastors did in standing against the ordinance passed by the city of Houston and encouraging members to sign the petition is a violation of the First Amendment." Well, Mayor Parker feels just horrible about this now. She says regarding the new updated subpoenas, "We don't need to intrude on matters of faith to have equal rights in Houston, and it was never the intention of the city of Houston to intrude on any matters of faith or to get between a pastor and their parishioners." Well, that sounds just great, Mayor. Thank you for your sensitivity on the subject. What a champion of freedom you turned out to be. There is still one problem. The city is continuing to intrude on matters of faith despite the latest mincing of words. Not only does the First Amendment guarantee religious expression unencumbered by the government, it also allows freedom of speech to all citizens, period. religious or otherwise. While some would call the endorsement of a petition political, claiming it violates separation between church and state, they seem to forget that when the state is telling the church what it can or cannot say, church and state are not staying particularly separated. They also fail to notice that it was never the purpose of the First Amendment to say that one cannot express concern over areas where their religious convictions are being affected by secular law. Our political system, by its very nature, deals with different ideas and implementations of ethics and morality. Both ethics and morality are also central to religion. The idea that churches should back away from such subjects has less to do with the First Amendment and more to do with what is commonly called the Johnson Amendment. Passed by Congress in 1954, this law states that organizations exempt from federal taxes may not participate in or intervene in, excluding the publishing or distributing of statements, I'm reading it in its actual words, any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. Well, Lyndon Johnson pushed this bill through. Coincidentally, he was running for re-election in the Senate at the time and did not seem to like churches speaking against his policies. Although technically the law only has to do with the literal endorsing of a candidate, the interpretation has been stretched to refer to any political speech at all. The matter gets subjective. Is opposition to genderless bathrooms or gay marriage political because it comments upon public policy, or religious because it violates biblical conviction? And who makes that distinction? Lawyers and judges? Meanwhile, many believe that even speech endorsing a candidate or opposing a bill is protected under the First Amendment. A couple of weeks ago, early in October, they had what was called Pulpit Freedom Sunday, where pastors all over the country deliberately spoke on political issues. And the idea was that they were hoping courts would, somebody would sue them, they would get up through the courts, maybe be ruled on it. I'm not sure they want the Supreme Court ruling on anything these days. It's kind of a 50-50 shot. That may or may not have been the best tactic, but that something needs to be done, that our religious liberties are under assault, that we couldn't just sit by and watch what was happening in Texas, that is absolutely clear. It leaves a real creepy feeling in your stomach to have the government censoring churches or wanting to monitor their sermons. And that's a creepy feeling that should not be taking place in what's supposed to be a free country, the United States of America, even when they change the word sermon to speech in the hopes that we're all just too stupid to know the difference. I've said this before and I'll say it again. When people stop believing in God, they'll start believing in anything. They don't talk about God in our public schools anymore. But here's the kind of stuff they do say in our public schools. There can be a little kindergarten boy who decides he feels like he's a girl and wants to use the bathroom. And what do the teachers say? The teachers that were hired to guide kids because they're adults and this is just a little kid. Oh, honey, well, if you feel like a little girl today, of course you can use the girls' restroom. And if a little girl feels embarrassed and doesn't like it and feels intimidated, well, it's okay. What are we doing to our children? You must know. I don't care if you're atheist or Christian. I don't care if you're conservative or liberal. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. You know this is nonsense, and it's nonsense that's harmful to our children. It fulfills what the scripture says. Thinking to become wise, they became fools. If you can't trust your instincts and instead you have to follow the pack and be politically correct, then you are behaving like a fool.
Alas, alas, for you lawyers and Pharisees, hypocrites that you be. Searching for souls and fools to forsake them, you travel the land, you scour with the sea. After you've got your converts, you make them twice as fit for hell as you are yourselves. Alas, alas, for you lawyers and Pharisees, hypocrites that you are. Sure that the kingdom of heaven awaits you, you will not venture half so far. Other men who might enter the gates you keep from passing through, drag them down with you. You snakes, you vipers brood, you cannot escape being devil's food. I send you prophets and I send you preachers, sages and rages and ages of teachers. Nothing can mar your mood. Alas, alas, for you lawyers and Pharisees, hypocrites to a man. Sons of the
dogs who murdered the prophets, finishing off what your fathers began. You don't have time to scorn and to scoff. It's getting very late. Vengeance doesn't wait. You snakes, you vipers, you cannot escape being devil's food. I send you prophets and I send you preachers, sages and rages and ages and teachers, nothing in my your mood.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development, that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Another horrible shooting at a school. Another opportunity for politicians to exploit the situation. Another opportunity to call for further gun control. Sure, that'll do it. Here's a person who has no qualms about shooting and murdering people. What stops him? Oh, wait. In order to murder, I would first have to break the law and obtain a gun illegally, because guns are no longer being sold to law-abiding citizens. Well, heck, can't break the law. I guess the shooting spree is off. Problem solved. By the way, this kid who did the shooting in Washington was Native American. Now, I mentioned this for only one reason. Have you noticed that conservatives are not making general criticisms of Native Americans over this? They shouldn't, and they're not. We are not rushing to judgment by indicting Native American religion or Native American lifestyle the way we are always accused of rushing to judgment when a Muslim goes on a lone jihad, such as what happened again this week in Canada and New York. Are you catching this? Do you see the difference? You see, the great spirit in Native American religion does not command people to go on jihads. Allah in the Quran does. So whereas religion has nothing to do with the Washington shooting, it does have something to do with a man using his axe to attack policemen in New York City. If you'd like to comment on any of this, of course, you can reach me on Facebook, Twitter, or directly questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, SIEGEL.net. Now, regarding the church situation in Houston that I discussed in today's monologue and responding to the column version published on my column Forbidden Table Talk, Adamo says, The subpoenas have nothing to do with taking away the pastor's freedom to speak or preach against hero or homosexuality in their churches. The city attorneys only want to see what these pastors communicated to their church about the collection of signatures. This is the basic discovery process of any lawsuit. If there is evidence that the churches knew and understood the proper guidelines to collect signatures, then the city can use that information in this case. Okay, Adamo, my article mentioned the signatures. The church has a constitutional right to say anything it wants about signatures without being bothered by the government. And the idea behind the subpoena was separation between church and state. That was made clear by a spokesperson for the mayor, that if they were actually talking about signatures, that's part of the political process and they've lost their right to freedom of speech. So this is, goes way beyond simple discovery. They were also being asked for speeches on related matters, for any speech that talked about hero at all, with or without the signatures. And I made all that clear in my article, and the news sources for the article were credited. On the other hand, on Facebook, Patty, Melinda, Tony, Michael, and Mary Beth, they all liked what I had to say. That's because they have wisdom beyond their years. And this person calls himself Amadouin. He agrees with me, too, and sees a lot of hypocrisy here. He says, left-leaning, minority-based churches talk politics all the time, even to the point of allowing favored Democrat candidates to address the congregation from the pulpit. This is big-time bias, and it's pretty obviously an intimidation tactic. Catholic churches have been harassed as well for hinting from the pulpit that anti-abortion candidates merit positive voter attention. Well, these past few shows in the previous weeks, I've been talking much about Islam, pointing out that contrary to popular politically correct talking points, it is not in fact a religion of peace. I also write it about it in my articles and my tweets. And following one of my recent tweets, Tim says the following. He says, any religion can be used to justify evil acts and has throughout history. There is no question Islam is being used by far too many people as a justification for their evil acts and intentions. Thankfully, Jews and Christians have reinterpreted verses like Deuteronomy 17, which commands the killing of idolaters, non-believers, so that these kinds of acts are very rarely carried out except by crazy people. Islam is suffering from a lack of a major reformation regarding infidels, quote unquote. My 5 trips to the Middle East and the Gulf and working with many, many Muslims from high-ranking government officials to ordinary citizens reinforce the importance of not painting Islam with a broad brush of violence and fear. The Muslims I know and worked with reject the radicals and the crazies in their interpretation of Islam. The problem is the radicals are the ones getting all of the press and have the loudest voices. The moderate in the brawl, Muslims also, in my opinion, have failed to put their face out there in a prominent way and denounce the radicals in a way that our Western culture can appreciate. I suspect that there may be some fear among some to speak out too loudly as well. This is why, again, Islam is in desperate need of a far and wide-reaching reformation with prominent and charismatic leadership to promote a truly universal, peaceful interpretation of their faith. Okay, that's quite a long letter from Tim, but I appreciate it, and he has written before. Now, Tim, it's true that any religion can be taken out of context and misused to justify murder. That has certainly happened with Christianity, particularly during the Inquisition and at least some of the actions in the Crusades. However, and this is very important, when Christians murdered in the name of Jesus, they were doing so in disobedience to Jesus. Muslims have been doing so in obedience to Muhammad, and that is such an important distinction. When Christians had reformations, they went back to what the Bible was truly, honestly saying. For Muslims to have a reformation, they wouldn't be able to go back to what the Quran is truly saying, because the Quran's truly telling them to go out and do that kind of stuff. They would have to deny the accurate teaching of the Quran, pretend it's not there. The only way to study a document, this goes for any document, but right now we're talking about ancient documents, the only way to study an ancient document in its context is to ask 2 questions. What did the original author intend to say? And what did his audience understand him to say? The original audience. We know that when Muhammad commanded people to spread Islam with a sword, that his plain words were his plain intention. He didn't mean go on a jihad like against bacteria, like a Muslim doctor today claims. He meant jihad against people. Now, how do we know that that's what he meant? Because that is exactly what he did himself. Jesus, on the other hand, said, put down the sword. those who live by the sword die by the sword. Now, Jesus was not living under Old Testament law, which you referred to, but even Old Testament law is misunderstood by many. You quoted, or you referred to Deuteronomy 17. Deuteronomy 17 is not talking about spreading Judaism with a sword all over the world. The Jews were given no such command. It is talking about citizens of Israel not worshiping idols. This was a covenant that the people of Israel had agreed upon together, not something they were mandating to other nations or unbelievers who didn't follow their religion. Now, although God commands a death penalty for people that did idolatry, this was merely to show the seriousness of the situation. A lot of people don't realize this, but financial restitution could be offered instead of the death penalty in capital offenses in those days, unless it was the capital offense of murder. So an idolater could have paid a fine instead. Why did God talk about it as a capital offense? To show how serious it is for people to worship the wrong God. In either event, such commands did not exist under Jesus' new covenant anyway, and Christians live by following Jesus, not the Old Testament. Now back to Islam. I realize there are many Muslims who renounce the radicals, and I appreciate that you've met many friendly Muslims. So have I. I've met wonderful Muslims who were wonderful people. But let me say this as carefully as I can. When you talk about Muslims renouncing the radical Muslims, the ones that you're calling radical, they're not the radicals. Radical means you're deviating from something. They are the true Muslims because they are truly following Muhammad. A Muslim who opposes jihad is the radical. And those kinds of radicals I'd like to see. Many Muslims today call themselves moderate, but the truth is the Quran leaves no room for moderation. Surah 9, believers make war on the infidels who dwell among you. Surah 48, Muhammad is God's apostle. Those who follow him are ruthless to unbelievers, but merciful to one another. Another one from Surah 9, Prophet, make war on the unbelievers and the hypocrites and deal rigorously with them. Hell shall be their home and evil fate. They swear by God that they said nothing, and now he's given the reason that they make war on them. They uttered the word of unbelief and renounced Islam after embracing it. Now, for this reason then, Tim, those who consider themselves moderate Muslims are actually nominal Muslims. Now, what do I mean by nominal? Well, I could use this term of Christians too. Just as there are people who live in America or Europe who know absolutely nothing about the Bible other than a few choice ideas taken out of context, people who nevertheless call themselves Christians because they were raised with some kind of church background, there are likewise many people born into Muslim countries or raised by Muslim families. If you asked them if they believed in the Quran, they would say yes. If you asked if they believed in the jihad, they would deny it. And they would be telling the truth. There are millions of such people, and yes, they are peaceful Muslims. There are also Muslims who see the jihad verses and choose to interpret them differently. However, any Muslim who takes the Quran seriously and literally, who truly understands the entire message, not only accepts the jihad commands, but is also taught that it is okay to lie during a time of war.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Hi, I'm Dana Wright, here to talk about Bob Siegel's book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... The title itself is an open-ended question. You fill in the rest. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but... Is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? How will God judge people who never heard of Jesus? Can a scientific mind really accept miracles? These are but some of the concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book has been enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians alike. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. In our last segment, I was reading a letter from Tim, a very long, passionate letter, where he was saying that there are many Muslims who are peaceful. I agreed with that, but I kind of made the point that it's irrelevant to the way we critique the religion. He was talking about how the Bible can be taken out of context, too. Well, when people do violence in the name of Christianity, they really are taking the Bible out of context. When they do violence in the name of Islam, they're just reading what the Quran really says, and that's based on an honest literary criticism of both books. And by the way, even though I'm a Christian, I have read the Quran cover to cover and word for word. I wouldn't be criticizing it that much if I had not read it for myself. But anyway, Tim, it is always good to hear from you, so I want to thank you for writing in. And by all means, feel free to give us a call and respond to my response. You're always welcome to do that. Now, I mentioned before the break, just staying on this subject a little bit, that there are Muslims, on the other hand, who call themselves, again, they're Muslims who just haven't read the Quran or they honestly reinterpret it. There are others who are very aware of the jihad commands, believe in them, embrace them, but will call themselves peaceful. So it's sometimes like the tares and the wheat. You don't know which is which. And here's what's a real kicker. It is okay for Muslims, it is taught in their religion, that it is okay to lie during a time of war. Now, I don't want to just say that. Why not let Muhammad speak for himself? And I'm quoting from the Hadith. He says, lying is wrong, except in three things. The lie of a man to his wife to make her content with him. The lie to an enemy for war is deception. Or a lie to settle trouble between people. You see what I'm saying, folks? Even so-called moderate Muslims are allowed to lie during a time of war and deny that they believe in the jihad. On that note, when is militant Islam not at war? This explains why CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, was caught having ties to terrorist groups. It's not that much of a stretch of the imagination. So a lot of times these people that are claiming to be peaceful are not really peaceful. How do you cause a Muslim to commit a Freudian slip? Just let them talk long enough. If you start saying things like, well, we renounce 9/11, but I do hope America has learned its lesson about not taking Israel's side, or We're doing this because of the plight of the poor Palestinians, or, well, what about America and her oil? And then all of a sudden you notice they're starting to give excuses more than they're renouncing it. That's what I call a Muslim Freudian slip. Okay, well, we'll switch gears here. As you know, I am a Christian apologist, and one of the things that we do is defend the accuracy of the Bible. Now, a few weeks ago on some previous shows, I talked about the testimony of Jesus from history contemporary to the New Testament or not long after it, in many cases by secular sources and historians and satirists from Rome who didn't like Christianity. What I'd like to do now is go into the field of archaeology, and I'm going to start with Old Testament archaeology. Next week I'll do some New Testament archaeology, or maybe if we have time we'll get a little bit into the New Testament this week. Now, for years and years and years, people were saying, well, archaeology doesn't really authenticate the Old Testament, unless you get to the time of the Babylonian exile or the conquering under the Assyrians, we really don't have any corroboration that these events happened. In fact, they'll say that until you get to the time of the Babylonian exile, you don't even find the name of anybody in the Bible in any kind of archaeological dig. Well, first of all, there's a famous Egyptologist. That's an archaeologist who specifies in Egypt. The Egyptians did us a great service. They left their history for us in 3D. It may have been based on a lot of superstition, but between the mummies and the cuneiform writings and the carvings on the walls, boy, it's just every archaeologist's dream. Anyway, Kenneth Kitchen is an Egyptologist, and commenting on things that the Old Testament has not authenticated or has not yet authenticated, he gives a very interesting statement, which I think is foundational. He says, absence of evidence is not the same as evidence of absence. Having said that, there's all kinds of stuff that people said couldn't be true that they read about in the Old Testament. And then in time, you got to realize the Bible's been around a long time. So has archaeology. In time, archaeology actually ends up confirming the Bible. There's a group of people called the Horites. Now, they were mentioned in a genealogy of Esau in the land of Canaan. People were saying there's no evidence that these people even existed. But that changed when some American archaeology teams between the years 1925 and 1933 confirmed the existence of these people. Jules Wellhausen, a very famous 19th century Bible critic, said brass mirrors could not have existed at the time of Moses. But there are some verses such as Exodus 38 that talk about brass mirrors. But you know what? Archaeology has come to the rescue again. They found brass mirrors in the period of Egypt's history between 1500 to 1400 BC. King David lived long before the time of the Babylonian exile. Like I said, they were saying there's no corroboration for any Bible character. That changed with two discoveries that found the phrase House of David carved on basalt and from countries outside of Egypt. So these countries were acknowledging, or countries outside of Israel, I meant to say, these countries were acknowledging that King David did have a dynasty in Israel. That's very important historically. And the latest one was discovered in the 1980s. Now, some people have said there's no evidence. Well, boy, you get talking to some of the Muslims these days. They'll say Israel has no historical claim to the land at all. That as far back as ancient times, this indigenous group of people called the Palestinians lived there until the 20th century and the Jews came over from Europe and displaced them. Well, that's not exactly true. There's an archaeological find called Israel Stele. And this was at the time of Merneptah. It was something of an engraving that he did or was done on his behalf. He's the successor to Ramses II. Ramses II, people believe, was the pharaoh of Egypt when Moses left. Did you know you could go to the museum in Cairo and look at Ramses' body? You can literally stare at the body of a prominent biblical character, villainous biblical character, but prominent biblical character. Doesn't that blow your mind? Anyway, his successor, Merneptah, 1213 to 1203. This was discovered in 1896 at Thebes. It's now housed in the Egyptian Museum in Cairo. And it says, Israel is laid waste and is seed not. Now, Egypt never went over and conquered Israel after Israel left Egypt. But that's okay. People in those days would lie and historically revise their history all the time. But they bragged about it. But see, he still did us a great service because by bragging about it, he's admitting that there's an Israel. There's a country called Israel. Now, there undoubtedly some Israelites had some kind of clash with him, and maybe he did conquer some town or something and just stretched the truth a little bit. Now, one of the things that comes up a lot, though, is how come there's no evidence of a Hebrew sojourn in Egypt? Well, first of all, the Hebrews lived in the eastern delta, which is more moist than the rest of Egypt, and ancient remains decompose more rapidly. Also, they were slaves. It's usually nobility, a priesthood, or royalty that's given recognition. Historians don't write as much about slaves. That's not to say they don't write anything. A third, not many Hebrews were sufficiently educated to produce records and papyrus materials, and papyrus materials would not have survived long in the Delta anyway. More on Old Testament archaeology when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Looking for a church that will not only challenge you, but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 and Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda. But you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. too hot, and people who approach that area have been known to disappear. But they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back. Skyline Church, Sunday services at 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock a.m. Back to our program. We've been talking about Old Testament history, and I've been answering the question, why was there no evidence of the Hebrew sojourn in Egypt? Right before the break, I mentioned that the Hebrews lived in the Eastern Delta, which was more moist, and a lot of the remains would have decomposed more rapidly. Also, they were slaves. It was usually the nobility that was written about by historians. And not many Hebrews were sufficiently educated to produce records and papyri materials, and papyri materials would not have survived long in the Delta anyway. And then moving on then, if they did keep such records, they would have taken them along on the Exodus. And finally, the area where they lived is now heavily populated, so we can't excavate it anyway. Having said that, and we do have a caller, Tim, who wrote that comment, is called. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. Let me just wrap up a little of this archaeology first, just for a minute here, and then we'll do more of this at another time. But you know, the Egyptians were notorious for blotting from their historical records any embarrassment, such as some of the problems they had with the people called the Hyksos. They were expelled and their monuments were destroyed. And we know about the Hyksos only because other countries wrote about them. They were an Asiatic group in that land. But one thing that is mentioned by the Egyptians, a group of people called the Habiru. Now, if that name sounds a lot like the word Hebrew, you're right. It does sound a lot like it. It could have included the Hebrews. It could have just been the Hebrews. But that was an assortment of Asiatic peoples, at the very least, that settled in the East Delta. Many were pressed into service by Ramses to construct his palaces and temples. And according to cuneiform documents, this includes people known as the Habiru and others. So this could actually be a record of the Hebrews anyway. Well, we'll do more of that some other time, but I do want to welcome Tim, and I imagine he's calling to respond to my response. Tim, welcome to our program.
Well, I appreciate you giving me the chance to respond to your response to my letter to you.
Well, it's good to hear from you. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to hear you, too. I wanted to clarify my point, and I think this is a slightly different angle on this, and is this. When I speak to the Muslims that I'm talking about terrorists and jihadists and people who support those kinds of people ideologically, what I'm not saying is that these are nominal Muslims. These are people who in the middle of working say, you know, call to prayer, and they do call to prayer. These are women who are extremely observant, men who are extremely observant. These are people who do know the Quran and believe that it's being misinterpreted. And the difference, I think, is they're saying those people are not true Muslims, okay? In other words, everything you're saying about Christianity and the wrong interpretation of Christianity or the wrong interpretation of the Old Testament with regard to what is worthy of death penalty, obviously, they say the exact same thing. And so at the end of the day is this. There has to be a different interpretation, and I know you're saying there can't be a different interpretation, and the only true interpretation is one of violence and evil and terrorism and all these kinds of things. But suppose you're right for a second. What do you do about it? I mean, what is the solution to this? And I don't see the solution as being anything other than going with the people who see the interpretation of terror and jihad and these things as being the incorrect interpretation. That has to be the right way to go.
Okay, but let me interject just so we can keep this a dialogue. First of all, I'm fine with that. If Muslims want to interpret the Quran and give it a more peaceful interpretation, that's great. That's fantastic. Let's hope more of them do it. I do think it's important, though, for people to not mince words, and I'm not suggesting that you're doing that. I believe you're a person of integrity, Tim, I do. But I hear people come on and say, Islam's really this beautiful, peaceful religion. It's just been hijacked by a few nutcase terrorists. Now, there may be Muslims who sincerely go to the mosque and sincerely interpret the Quran differently. In my definition of what I would call nominal Christians, I would include Christians who go to church, to liberal churches, and interpret the Bible very differently. There's Christians that say Christ never claimed to be the only way. I don't believe he was really God. I've met people that call themselves Christians that don't even believe in the resurrection. So sooner or later, we run head into the question of literary criticism. And so in a way, we're talking about two different things here. Would the world be a better place if Muslims had the kind of reformation where they completely reinterpreted the Quran? Sure, but at the moment, a lot of Muslims are not reinterpreting it. They're simply looking at what it actually says. Now, when you mentioned that you've had many talks with friendly Muslims, I believe you, and like I said, I have too. You know, I was doing campus ministry for many years, and long before 9/11, one place in this country where you used to meet a lot of Muslims was the college campus as exchange students. And I saw an honest hungering and thirsting for God. But having said that, I would be hard-pressed to find a country that is its government is ruled by the Muslims, and whereas you can always, on the micro level, find a peaceful family that doesn't go along with this. I also have to notice that Bibles are forbidden in Saudi Arabia. Children in Palestinian schools are taught that Jews are evil and should be exterminated. Homosexuals are executed in countries like Saudi Arabia, Iran, Mauritania, Sudan, Somalia, and Yemen. You see my point, Tim? The politically correct these days will jump over all over Christians just for claiming they don't agree with same-sex marriage. And yet here's a religion that's actually executing homosexuals, and they go, oh, well, no, 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 no. It's actually this beautiful, peaceful religion. So on the macro level, I'm not seeing as much of that peace. On the micro level, sure, there are individual Muslims. Go ahead. I'll let you respond.
First of all, I'm not defending Islam.
No, I know you're not. I know you're not. You're just saying there's a lot of peaceful Muslims, too. And I hope you hear that I'm agreeing with you on that point. I think we're disagreeing as to what makes them peaceful, a true or a false interpretation of the Quran. I think that's where we have a difference of opinion.
Right, and being neither a Christian nor Muslim, what I see is not being part of any of these religions. It is I see a pattern, and I see a pattern of people saying, "Well, this is what a true this is," and anyone who deviates from this and does the bad stuff isn't a true this, or whatever it might be. And I hear you saying it about Christians who interpret the Bible in ways that allow them to justify their actions that you would disagree with. And I'm saying, I don't think it's fair to necessarily say, well, when Muslims do the exact same thing that you're doing, what they're doing is they're just misinterpreting their scripture and they're just nominal Muslims.
Okay, what would,
I don't think it's a fair.
What set of facts would I need at my disposal before such a statement would be fair? Okay, my friend, can you hold with me over the break?
You got it.
So go ahead and think about that. We'll look forward to a nice spiffy answer when you get back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. Bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. We have Tim on the line. Tim, welcome back to our program.
Good to be here.
Now, Okay, so you think it's unfair where on one hand I say, well, those who say this or that about Jesus aren't correctly interpreting the Bible. But then I'll say that Muslims who claim that jihad isn't commanded in the Quran, they don't have a right to say the same thing. Well, of course, as far as freedom of speech goes, they have a right to say everything they want. But according to literary criticism, Tim, I appreciate the fact that you're neither a Muslim nor a Christian. As a result, maybe you haven't studied that much the Bible or the Quran, but I do believe you to be an intelligent person. So let me just ask you, would you agree with the rule of literary criticism that I gave you, that whatever book we're talking about, even if we're talking about reading Tolstoy, what the author intended to say and what the audience he wrote it for understood it to mean, is that not the correct interpretation? Or are words just never clear and we can interpret them any way that we want?
Right. I think that to some extent you're correct. However, I think the degree to which one might say they have confidence of what that original interpretation and original intent was, I think, is a completely different story. And I think...
Let me tell you why I'm confident. First of all, the Quran is not written in chronological order. Second of all, one of the reasons people get away with saying that is there are an awful lot of verses in the Quran that talk about making peace. So what happens is people look at one of the ones about war and they go, yeah, but here it talks about peace. What people are failing to understand or point out is that Muhammad didn't write, well, Muhammad recited it. He didn't write it anyway. His disciples wrote it down. But it was not written in chronological order. Muhammad did, and now we're just dealing with historical facts. Muhammad did try originally to spread his religion peacefully. When that did not work, by an amazing coincidence, he got new revelations. And in these new revelations, they said things like, be ruthless to unbelievers, merciful to one another, prophet, make war on the unbelievers and hypocrites and deal rigorously. So he said that, he did that himself. That's actually how he came into power. That's actually how he conquered Mecca. So I think it's pretty abundantly clear what he meant. Now, when I hear a Muslim doctor say, well, for me, I go on a jihad against bacteria, that's wonderful. I hope we have a lot more Muslims like that. But come on, Tim, we both know that's not what Muhammad was trying to say.
Well, the point is, most Muslims are not jihadists, okay? It's a small minority that fall into the category that you're objecting to.
Okay, let me respond to that. I've got a few statistics here now.
Let me give my statistic real quick before you give yours. I don't know the statistics on this. I'm specifically and almost verbatim quoting Michael Medved, because I was listening to his show on Friday at 2:25 p.m. I memorized this because I couldn't believe he said it. Was that he said a vast majority of Muslims are not these terrorist jihadist types.
They're not. They're not. The vast majority of Muslims are not terrorists, but what they believe is different. Let me give you these stats, and if you'd like, I could send you a copy of this, and I'll tell you what some comes from the Gallup poll, some come from the Human Rights Center, but. 2/3 of Muslims around the world believe in Sharia law. 80% of Muslim women believe wife beating is normal. 91% of Jordanian college students approve of wife beating. That's college students. 6 majority Muslim nations polled have a negative opinion of Jews. 61% of Muslims around the world do not believe 9/11 was carried out by Arabs. 40% of Indonesians would use violence against those blaspheming Islam. 78% of British Muslims believe in punishing those who draw anti-Muslim cartoons. 62% of British in that same survey said there should be no freedom of speech if it insults Muslims. 1 in 10 in Indonesia accept jihad. I'm not seeing quite, yes, there are peaceful Muslims. I'm not seeing quite as many as people are making it out to be. And that's just what the people believe. You go back again and look at the policies of some of those countries, even in cases where the people are peaceful, they are living under evil governments. Now, I believe people have an obligation eventually to overthrow a tyrannical government. I know that's more easily said than done. I get that. But we would probably agree that the Nazis should have tried to overthrow Hitler. Some of them did try to overthrow him. Most of them did not. There is a responsibility here. So again, I'm not denying that the peaceful Muslims exist, but that seems to be an awful lot of people that are reading these verses in the Quran and just taking Muhammad right at his word instead of reinterpreting it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'm I find it fascinating. The first several statistics you quoted had to do with domestic violence issues, because that's specifically why I went to the Middle East on a contract through the State Department. And I had the opportunity to meet with the equivalent of basically their head of their police of the country. I met with their assistant secretary of state. I met with Queen Rania on these things. And there is a major effort and shift to change these attitudes and behaviors. And if they're so rooted in the Quran, and these can't all be a bunch of nominal Muslims who are trying to do this. These are people who are sincere, dedicated, devoted Muslims who are trying to change the way that the Bible, their Bible, I should say, is interpreted.
Well, I'm glad they're trying to do that, but to do that, they'd have to root verses out of the Quran, like Surah 4, men have authority over women.
They don't.
And in chapter 2, we're told that husbands who want to have sex with their wives can have it, and the wives have nothing to say about it. We had a Muslim go to court in New Jersey claiming his right to do that. The judge actually let him off. I mean, so what I'm saying is that...
Bob, it wasn't a crime to rape your own wife in America until about 30, 40 years ago.
That's a problem with America, but that takes us off the subject, because right now I'm talking about Islam.
Because that was a Christian. That was based on a Christian.
No, but you can't find a verse in the Bible that says it's okay to rape your wife.
No, it has to do with interpretation. And what I'm saying is interpretation is everything.
Did you notice that I just read those verses? The first one, I just read it to you, and I didn't actually offer an interpretation. The ones on the jihad, I'm just reading them.
You didn't read the whole verse. You read one line. You didn't read the whole thing.
434. Let me read the entire verse. 434. Men have authority over women because God has made the one superior to the other, and because they spend their wealth to maintain them. Good women are obedient. They guard their unseen parts because God has guarded them. But I guess I didn't read the whole thing, so now I did. So what's the different interpretation?
Let me tell you this. A good friend of mine from college, when he became a brand new baby born again Christian and married a preacher's wife in the South, in Mississippi of all places. Near Nashville, Tennessee. And one thing he told me. And this is interesting. He says, I'm getting married, and the good thing is my wife has to have sex with me whenever I want it because we're Christian. And you're going to say that is not the right interpretation, and I agree with you, it's not the right interpretation. But my point is, it's about interpretation.
But aren't there times when a verse actually says what it means and means what it says too? For instance, Tim, supposing I said, well, Tim, thank you for calling in and agreeing with me. Thank you, Tim. What I heard you just say is there are no peaceful Muslims in the world. Supposing, did you just call in and tell us that there are no peaceful Muslims in the world? Hello, Tim.
No,
you didn't.
Hello?
Okay, you didn't. Now, supposing I said, well, maybe you didn't say that, but that's how I interpret your words. Wouldn't that be ridiculous? Why don't we use the same objective? Why do we change the standards just because
analogous.
It's... My point, hold on, Tim. My point is, just because we're talking about religion, people usually think we can change our standards of interpretation. Sometimes how we feel that if it's religious, well, you know, it's not really true anyway. It's all made up, and your interpretation is beautiful. My interpretation is beautiful. But we're not being fair, because these religions don't claim to be made up. They claim to come from God. They're subject to the same scrutiny or truth claims. If somebody takes a verse of the Bible out of context, and I can objectively show him that he did that, I'm going to do that. If somebody takes a verse of the Quran out of context, and I can objectively show him they did that, I'm going to... Both books still mean what they say and say what they mean.
If it were... I know you're a proponent that there's only one true interpretation of the Bible, and that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, there's a reason why there's tens of thousands of versions of Protestant Christianity alone. There's a reason why you're not a Catholic.
Yeah, and right? I could tell you that those reasons have nothing to do with the Bible. The entire Church of England was created by Henry VIII because the Pope wouldn't give him a divorce. I mean, we have reasons like that for a different... Anyway, Tim, we are out of time. But listen, I want you to feel free to call back anytime. We can revisit the subject. I know you've offered your opinions on other things. You're a great guy. I really do appreciate you, and I really do enjoy talking with you. And I'm serious when I say that I believe you to be a person of academic integrity.
You're a good guy, Bob. Great talking to you.
Okay, my friend. Take care. And I will see you next week, everybody. Next week, more biblical archaeology. We only got into a little bit today. We'll do a lot more next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.